Chapter 4. Success comes from this foundation. Develop your mission and purpose. Effective negotiation is effective decision-making, plain and simple. And the foundation of effective decision-making is a valid mission and purpose to guide it. This is bedrock in my system. How can you stay on track during a long negotiation or endeavor of any kind without a clear mission and purpose? There's no other way. But if you do develop and adhere to a valid mission and purpose, how can you go off track? It's impossible. If you have a valid mission and purpose, and the result of your negotiation fulfills this mission and purpose, it's a good and worthwhile negotiation. Now, that's pretty simple. It doesn't sound all that profound, but the principle works like magic. It's an airtight guide for effective decision-making. Remember from the previous chapter that list of doubts that disrupt effective decision-making? Here it is again, and it could have been a lot longer. Why take this deal? The whole thing sounds too good to me. Maybe I can win even more. Why are they making this so easy? What do they know that I don't know? This can't be right. How can I get out of this? Forget all this stuff. If your negotiation serves a valid mission and purpose, you don't have to worry about whether you get every last dollar or concession out of the deal, or whether you gave enough dollars and concessions. You don't worry about the long-term relationship. You're not responsible for the other party's decisions. You don't care whether this contract is win-win, win-lose, lose-win, or lose-lose. Such scorekeeping is suddenly seen for what it is: arbitrary, empty, meaningless. You don't have to worry about it anymore, and this freedom will liberate you in a negotiation, believe me. I teach and I preach that mission and purpose is the very essence of success. It must become as automatic as breathing. You must develop the habit of referring to it on matters great and small, because it gives you crystal clear guidance in all cases. The ultimate example of the effectiveness of the mission and purpose to guide decisions in the most difficult and critical circumstances imaginable, so difficult and critical that they're unimaginable really to my mind, was President Lincoln's single-minded focus on saving the Union. That was his mission and purpose in his negotiation with his constituency and his other negotiation with the Confederacy. Save the Union. At any cost. Lincoln had decided that the dream of a North American continent that could avoid the precedent offered by European states, war after war after war, would be so jeopardized should the Union break apart that he was willing to make any personal sacrifice, which he did in the end, and not to his surprise, and he was willing to ask any sacrifice of his people, including this civil war, in the service of that mission and purpose. As the general of the Union troops in the Civil War, Ulysses S. Grant adhered without hesitation to Lincoln's mission and purpose of saving the Union by any means necessary, including horrible losses on the battlefield. Grant sacrificed his troops before the Confederate barricades at Vicksburg and Spotsylvania and Cold Harbor and Petersburg because he understood that his superior numbers and equipment would win the war of attrition in the end. But as a president, Grant was a failure, taking bad advice, making bad decisions, dealing with a host of unsavory characters, mainly because he didn't know why he was president and what he hoped to accomplish during Reconstruction. He didn't have a clear mission and purpose. What great decision, what great achievement was accomplished without the valid M&P? Certainly there have been accidental discoveries in technology, but again, I ask you, what great political or scientific or social or philanthropic deed or what work of art was pulled off without the focus, control, and resolution provided by a clear mission and purpose? I don't believe you can name one. Another favorite illustration I use in my workshops is the example of Thomas Alva Edison, who could have settled for putting up one streetlight as a demonstration of his technology, or who could have wired the world's first electric toaster. But he hewed to his mission and purpose, adopting electrical energy for the everyday use of mankind, and invested an astronomical amount of his own money in order to light up an entire block in New York City. What a great story! What a great vision! What a great mission and purpose! How many decisions will make things tougher today than they were yesterday, but benefit you dramatically in the long term? I often use the example of the hypothetical inventor who can invest his life savings either in a marketing campaign for his product or in a complicated, expensive patent application on which there won't be a decision for 3 to 5 years. Without a valid mission and purpose, he might go astray, think short term, and go to the market without a patent. But what happens if the product does take off and he hasn't protected his invention? He's lost in both the short and the long terms. With a valid mission and purpose, he wouldn't make that mistake. He'd file for that patent. Another more practical story involves a storyteller and artist with a successful business in the Midwest. This client lived in a small town and had the opportunity to become involved with all sorts of businesses, some directly related to his native talents and aspirations, some pretty far-fetched in that regard. He had acquired a copy shop, a print shop, and an internet service provider, just to name a few of his enterprises. Clearly, he's a very bright guy with a lot of energy, and if an opportunity seemed pretty good, he dived right in. After a few years, he became the classic situation of overreaching. He had failed to stick to his knitting, as Grandmom used to say. This happens a lot, of course. Someone starts out selling ice cream cones, then starts making the ice cream, then buys his own cows, and then figures he might as well open a butcher shop as well. First things first, I said to my new client, and he got to work on his mission and purpose. And this is what he determined. My mission and purpose is to help people see, discover, and decide to experience this world as a world of imagination and possibility and healing. We do this by sharing our stories and the model of our company in a way that is sustainable now and into the future our children will inherit. Once he put this valid mission and purpose in place, my client could see clearly which of his subsidiary companies made sense. Once he'd made this clear vision, the decisions about what to keep and what to divest were easy enough. For years now, he's done very well for himself and for many others by adhering to the spirit of his statement in all his businesses and negotiations. Throughout these pages, you'll see how negotiators and companies who have a valid mission and purpose in place, one which clearly expresses their long-term aim and continuing responsibility, are able to handle any contingency that may come up in the daily give and take of their businesses. Their decision-making abilities are tenfold more powerful than those of negotiators operating on a wing and a prayer. Supply system management adversaries will fire in your direction a veritable fusillade of promises, threats, requests, deadlines, quibbles, position papers, and other stuff. Mission and purpose will serve as your very own missile defense shield to deal with these tactics. Example. At the request of one of the biggest chip makers in the world, my client provided a complete, in-depth, across-the-board proposal for selling about $50 million worth of the boxes that carry the silicon chips along the production line in the factory. I should explain that these are not just any boxes. They're not corrugated paper, that's for sure, but high-tech in the extreme. They can cost almost $3,000 apiece. Four other companies in the world make these boxes. All had prepared proposals for the giant chipmaker. A great deal of negotiation had been required in order for my client to understand exactly what the customer required, but after receiving this comprehensive, carefully negotiated proposal, the supply system management team at the chipmaker tried to break out the pieces of the proposal and negotiate them separately. Why? To induce compromise, of course. My client declined to do this. Its mission and purpose was to provide the highest level of technology for the 300-millimeter arena, as it's known, while minimizing, to the extent possible, the risk of failure for the chipmaker. With this M&P in place, and given the fact that the elements of their proposal had been crafted to work in tandem to minimize the risk of failure for the chipmaker, my client simply couldn't agree to break their proposal into pieces, because this would have undermined their M&P. Of course, the supply system management people with the chipmaker weren't thinking in these terms. They saw their job as saving money up front. So the crux of the negotiation revolved around getting the real decision-makers at the chipmaker, the challenge of finding the real decision-makers is the subject of Chapter 11, to focus on the risk involved in using an inferior box, which was huge, because the failure of a single one at just the right place and just the right time in the production line can cost millions of dollars. In the end, that chipmaker saw the light, awarded the contract to my client, and paid full price. Mission and purpose is just as important for negotiations in our private lives as in our businesses and careers. I'm thinking of another client, the proud and happy father of a premature baby girl born with a defective heart valve, a condition the parents were told that many premature babies are born with. Sometimes this valve can be induced to close with drugs, but if not, surgery is required. In the case of my client's baby, the drugs failed. The doctors wanted to move her to another hospital for the required surgery, the hospital where the best pediatric thoracic surgeons practiced. The parents, my client and his wife, saw no reason for this move. The hospital their daughter was in had a state-of-the-art neonatal unit. In addition, there was an operating theater attached to the neonatal unit. They feared that transferring their daughter to another hospital was too much of a risk to take. But my client, a veteran businessman and negotiator, also knew he was too emotional to talk to the doctors and to argue his feelings effectively. This was a negotiation, pure and simple, and my client developed the specific mission and purpose of getting the head of the neonatal unit to see and decide that he was risking the baby's life by transferring her to another hospital. Having this idea in place guided what the parents said to the doctor and how they said it. It helped them keep their emotions in check, and this in turn prevented the doctors from lumping them, understandably enough perhaps, into the category of emotionally overwrought parents who don't have to be taken seriously. The mission and purpose did its job in guiding the interview with the doctors, although the eventual decision was a surprise. We'll see exactly how and why in Chapter 9. What happens if you don't have a valid mission and purpose in place? I've learned that a surefire way to get everyone's attention is to answer that question this way. If you're not working on behalf of your own mission and purpose, you're working on behalf of someone else's. That gives everyone pause. Now, it's fine to work on behalf of someone else if you understand that you're doing so, if you freely embrace and take their mission and purpose as your own or build your own to support theirs, but it is a terrible waste to work on behalf of someone else's mission and purpose without realizing it. But if you don't have one, haven't even thought about the subject, that's what's happening. People who are unhappy and frustrated in their work either have invalid mission and purposes, I want to make $1 million before I'm 21, or they don't have one and are serving someone else's, and some part of them understands this at some deep level. I know and have worked with quite a few freelancers and sole proprietors and owners of very small businesses who feel that their mission and purpose is self-evident. This was a mistake for my client in the Midwest, and it's a mistake for anyone in his position. The mission and purpose is not self-evident. If you work for yourself and do not have one in place, you're working at a great disadvantage. You're just as vulnerable to working and negotiating on behalf of an invalid mission and purpose as is an employee at a giant, faceless, multinational corporation. You must begin to develop one immediately. Now, let's see how to do this. Money and power are not valid. I want to make $1 million before I'm 21. I want to make $10 million this year. I want to leave a legacy of $100 million. I want to become president and CEO of this company. I want to be the most powerful politician in this state. XYZ is committed to increasing sales this year by 25%. These are some popular mission and purpose statements, if not stated quite so bluntly. This is how a lot of people and employees construe their lives and their company's work. Already, at this early point in the book, I imagine readers know the negative opinion I hold about all such statements. But the essential problem is not that these are narrow, short-sighted goals. The essential problem is that they are I-centered. They're set in the world of the individual building the mission and purpose. This is why they are 100% invalid and worthless for any person, business, or negotiation. I have nothing against money and power, properly acquired and used, but they must be the result, not the essence, of a valid mission and purpose. History and experience should tell each and every one of us, time and again, that having wealth and/or power as the aim in life will destroy any individual, and many other people in some instances. The cliche is worth repeating one more time. Money for money's sake does corrupt. Power for power's sake does corrupt. Will business people whose mission and purpose is to make a killing grow and thrive in the long run with such a narrow, self-serving mission and purpose? It's no more possible for them than it was for Hitler, Ferdinand Marcos, or Joseph Stalin. One of the great American business tragedies of the 1980s was the death of Eastern Airlines. Time has shown that Eastern didn't die. It was killed by its leadership and some junk bond guys. I'm sure these men could have presented a mission and purpose for public consumption that addressed jobs and lower ticket prices for the consumer and safety in the air. But the real M&P seemed to have been to strip the airline of its assets, leaving only bills and debt for the creditors. Perhaps the best case in point for more recent business annals is that of Quaker Oats and Snapple. The giant corporation bought the drink company for about $1.7 billion in 1994, believing that there would be a good fit between Snapple and their Gatorade brand. But Snapple had a completely different kind of distribution plan than Quaker Oats used for Gatorade, and the company's plan to force Snapple's distributors and buyers into conforming to the Gatorade model were resisted and eventually failed. A few years after Snapple was bought for the $1.7 billion, it was sold by Quaker Oats for about $300 million. The acquiring company, Triarc, knew what it was doing, rebuilt the brand, and sold it for $1.6 billion to Cadbury Schweppes, and they didn't even need that, since they were on the roadshow for their IPO when that offer came in. When I read about such acquisition debacles, of which there are many every year, I automatically analyze the deal in terms of valid versus invalid mission and purpose. On the surface, bringing Snapple and Gatorade under the same umbrella made sense, but the valid mission and purpose isn't just on the surface, and it doesn't suppose that the company that sells one popular drink can necessarily sell another one. What about the predatory negotiators I've warned about, who sound like the kind of people who would have make a killing as their mission and purpose? Well, maybe it's their M&P, but not necessarily. Their predatory negotiating is a means. They're simply taking advantage of weak win-win negotiators. They might have a perfectly valid mission and purpose. In any event, I don't blame the predatory negotiators. I blame the weak win-win negotiators who feed them. Another problem with concentrating on money and power as a mission and purpose is that you're scorekeeping. And scorekeeping means you're thinking about results over which you have no real control. To repeat, you're thinking about breaking par for the first time, or bogey more likely, not about the requirements of this crucial shot on 17. You're thinking about the new Beamer, not about the discipline and hard work you'll need in the negotiation that, if successful, will ultimately pay for that shiny new car. And one final point here, just to set the record straight. The great coach Vince Lombardi of the Green Bay Packers did say, for commercial purposes, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. But when I heard him address the football team at Ohio State during spring practice in 1965, I believe he put the point somewhat differently. Winning isn't everything, but the will to prepare to win is everything. I trust that the distinction between the two statements is clear. I also believe that the second statement must have reflected Lombardi's true feelings, because a great coach of any sport or any endeavor at all knows that the first attitude guarantees failure sooner or later, because winning is beyond our control, while preparation is 100% under our control. And what is the cornerstone of preparation? Mission and purpose. Your M&P is set in your adversary's world. Make that a valid mission and purpose. What is a valid M&P? Well, first and foremost, it must be set in the adversary's world. For a politician and leader, it must be set in the world of his or her constituents. For a business person, it must be set in the world of the customer. For a negotiator, it must be set in the world of the team sitting across the table. Setting the mission and purpose in the constituents or the customers or the adversary's world allows all of them to see clearly the features and benefits that you and your product or service have to offer them. For the negotiator, setting the mission and purpose statement in the adversary's world is a fundamental way in which you see your adversary's world clearly and without false assumptions, and get the adversary to see and act with the same clarity. My mission and purpose is to help people see, discover, and decide to experience this world as a world of imagination and possibility and healing. We do this by sharing our stories and the model of our company in a way that is sustainable now and into the future our children will inherit. When you heard the artist's mission and purpose a few pages back, perhaps you noticed something different about it, but didn't stop at the time to pin down this difference. Now's the time. Please take a minute or two to study the statement and absorb the fact that it's fundamentally, irrevocably set in the world of his customer. It has nothing whatsoever to do with buying more businesses or making more money, and not because he's playing games with words. He isn't. Listen. My mission and purpose is to help people see, discover, and decide to experience this world as a world of imagination and possibility and healing. We do this by sharing our stories and the model of our company in a way that is sustainable now and into the future our children will inherit. Recently, this client told me, "Mission and purpose is what I stand for in the world. Above all, what I want to accomplish and how I want to accomplish it. If it came to the hour of my death, I could say wholeheartedly that this is something that I am willing to live for." Recall my client who was about to meet with the doctors concerning his baby girl. His mission and purpose was to get the head of the neonatal unit to see and decide that he was risking the baby's life by transferring her to another hospital. It was set in the world of the doctors. In a valid mission and purpose, our world must be secondary. You might understandably ask, why, if it's my mission and purpose, do I want to focus on someone else? Because unless you live alone on a desert island, your mission and purpose is to focus on someone else. That someone else is your lifeblood, whether you're a politician, a doctor, a patient, a business person, or a negotiator. Don't ever forget this. As a negotiator, you don't go anywhere without your adversary, by definition. We all know the phrase that is now de rigueur in retail sales, the customer comes first. Well, I'd like to know the retail company that has thrived over a long period of time with any other modus operandi. This is the reason I wonder about the long-term prospects for companies that take advantage of booms and let their customer service slide. The airlines come to mind, judging by the number of complaints pouring into the FAA. Other companies that have theoretically modernized their customer service with those automated phone programs that serve mainly to enrage us with their endless loops may be in for a surprise when things cool off. There'll be some winners and losers, and I know who I'm betting on. Over the long haul, you put profits in the bank by putting the customer first, and there's a direct analogy with negotiation. We greatly enhance our opportunity for a successful deal by putting the adversary first in our mission and purpose. You make your killing, or just a solid profit, only by entering heart and soul into your adversary's world, business, needs, requirements, hopes, fears, and plans. Your mission and purpose is to allow her or him to see and decide that you build and service the best machine for the task at a competitive price. It is not to sell 10,000 machines this fiscal year. By providing the best machine, you may sell the 10,000, but focusing on them is putting the profit before the performance, your world before your adversary's. It won't work. Recall now the company on the brink of bankruptcy because it was losing $100,000 with every shipment. Costs were not the problem. The problem was that the company had been taken to the cleaners in the negotiation with its primary customer. It had allowed the price to be driven to below-cost levels. Let's examine some possible M&Ps for a company in this dire situation. Renegotiate this contract. Well, this company certainly did want to renegotiate the big contract. Become profitable again. Management, employees, and shareholders certainly did want it to become profitable again. But those approaches would never work, because they did not address the world of the other company with which it had the fateful contract, and which was under no obligation to renegotiate the contract. Instead of those two self-centered statements, the company developed the following customer-centered mission and purpose for the upcoming renegotiation. To help the other company's management at the very highest level, see our company as a new and revitalized organization that is going to change its effectiveness to the benefit not only of their company, but also to that of the whole industry, by becoming a more effective and competent supplier to that industry. And they were able to accomplish this mission. Remember our high school athlete deciding among colleges in Chapter 3? His mission and purpose was not get into a good program so I'll be recruited by the pros and sign for $5 million. He wasn't going to be a pro, and he knew it. Nor was his M&P to get into a top academic school so I can make lots of money after I graduate. Nor was it to get as far away as possible from home. The last two might have been considerations, but all would have been invalid missions and purposes because all were set in his world. His valid mission and purpose was to provide the coaches with an individual who would put forth the effort required for complete team success. Likewise, the mission and purpose of the booking agent for the dance company and the negotiation with the program director was not to secure another week of touring for the company and increase its earnings. It was not to secure a commission for the booking agent and increase her earnings. It was to get this director to see and decide that presenting this particular dance company would bring cultural richness to her organization's audiences and community, and to help the program director fulfill her organization's own mission and purpose. As an interviewee for a job, your mission and purpose might be to help the employer see and decide that you're a person of great character and integrity that the employer's company must have in order to take its business to a new level. As a realtor, it might be to help the seller see and decide that it is in her best long-term interest that she accept this offer that she's able to secure from you today. As a commercial plumber, it might be to help contractors see and decide that you bring great benefit to their projects by providing professional workmanship, using the highest quality supplies and materials available, and guaranteeing on-time completion. As a travel agent, it might be to help travelers see and decide that your knowledge and experience in the field and attention to detail would enhance every aspect of their travel. And what about Jim Camp, book author? My mission and purpose is to provide the opportunity for people to elevate their level of success. Accomplish this by means of clear, concise writing that presents in a systematic way the keys to decision-based negotiating. When I asked some of my clients about the wisdom of this project, a couple wondered aloud whether I could do the job sufficiently in a single book. Confronted by this doubt, I returned to my mission and purpose and thought about the key word, which is opportunity. My purpose here isn't to elevate your success regardless, but simply to provide you with the opportunity to do so. A huge difference, obviously, and I have no doubt at all that this book does provide that opportunity. And so, I'm writing it. In 1999, Major League Baseball umpires must have thought their mission and purpose was to show the lords of baseball that they couldn't get along without the umpires. Bad thinking. They were blinded by their incorrect assessment, and some of them paid with their jobs. Their mission and purpose should have been to get the players, the fans, and the lords of the game to see and decide that the umpires provide the highest level of expertise in calling balls and strikes and plays at the bases while remaining invisible on the field. Something like this, invisible, is important, I think, because I've played a lot of baseball and used to umpire Pony League games, and I know how easy it is for the ump to slip into a power trip. A mission and purpose including invisibility would well serve the umpires and referees in all sports. With such an M&P, why would you go on strike, which is by definition a high visibility act? What would have happened if the umpires had said instead that they would never go out on strike, because that would damage the game all of us love, but that they would work hard to alert the players and the fans of their situation, that they would hire a public relations firm to that end? I think the negotiation might have turned out differently. Of course, I'm shooting from the hip here. I wasn't privy to the details of that episode, and I don't know for sure how I would have coached either the umpires or the owners had they been my clients, but I do know that the umpires, surely, and maybe also the owners, were flailing around without a valid mission and purpose. And they were not alone. Invalid mission and purposes are set at the heart of many labor disputes, almost by definition. By now, the phrase see and decide in most of the mission and purpose statements presented here must be obvious. Why this phrase? Often, you want to create a vision in the other party that will move them to take action. Mission and purpose drives vision for all parties, and vision drives effective decision-making for all parties. It's as simple as that. In short, you may want your adversaries to see and decide. From what perspective will they see and decide? From the perspective of their own world, of course. Therefore, your mission and purpose must be set in their own world, the key criterion for a valid M&P. There are other criteria as well. All good mission and purpose statements are concise. If we can state our mission and purpose simply and concisely, we can create the vision we want. If we get too complicated, too convoluted, we cloud the vision. Even if such statements are valid, they make creating vision difficult. The mission and purpose must always be written. What happens when you go through the process of writing anything down? I can't tell you technically, but I do know that putting a thought in writing makes it stronger and reinforces commitment. Our mind is an amazing thing, but it can lose focus. Important matters are written down for a reason, and it's not to create busy work. So pick up your pen or sit down at the keyboard. This is the day and age of teamwork in business, and the team must have its own mission and purpose that is in complete support of the overall mission and purpose of the institution. Everybody has to be on the same page, and happily so. With a team, the mission and purpose has to be negotiated. And in a negotiation, all parties have the right to say no, of course. You may also have realized by now that an individual or a company may have more than one mission and purpose. The company renegotiating the contract on which it was losing $100,000 on every machine delivered developed a specific mission and purpose for the renegotiation. You or your company may well have many M&Ps, because you have one for almost every major task you undertake, and for many seemingly minor tasks as well. You have the overall mission and purpose for your business or enterprise. You have a second mission and purpose for your negotiation with a specific adversary. Within that negotiation, you have yet other layers of mission and purpose, each of which guides the decision-making at that point. In complicated, high-stakes negotiations, my clients may have written a mission and purpose for almost every phone call to anyone on the other side. No kidding. And each, of course, is set in the world of the adversary. And one more thing about mission and purpose, which may at first blush sound completely contradictory to every previous point in this chapter. Your mission and purpose can, and perhaps should, change. If you're a plumber, the skills and attributes you bring to your work may not change, so your mission and purpose might not either. But it might if, say, the emphasis of your business switched from residential to commercial. We can easily see how the situation of an individual with a less clearly focused business, like real estate, might change. In any event, if the features and benefits that you bring to the table do change, you'll have a different vision of what can be accomplished, and your mission and purpose should change accordingly. Earlier in this chapter, I referred to Ulysses S. Grant's victory as a Civil War general, but failure as a president. Another way to look at that career is that Grant had the mission and purpose for the Civil War, but was unable to develop one for his Reconstruction presidency. One could analyze George Bush's re-election defeat in 1992 as a failure to convince the electorate that he had a new mission and purpose for a post-Gulf War America. In 2000, Al Gore lost the election in large part, I believe, because he, like many vice presidents who run for the presidency, wasn't quite able to develop and sell his own M&P, one independent from Bill Clinton's. Think about how the Internet has changed the products and services that phone companies offer to their customers, that catalog companies offer their customers, or that advertising companies offer their customers. I've already mentioned how Bill Gates finally saw the light regarding the Internet and changed Microsoft's mission and purpose in 3 months. The Internet has or should have changed the mission and purpose of most of the businesses in this economy. In the end, who will be immune to it? A valid M&P will never let you down. In his excellent book, Management, Tasks, Responsibilities, and Practices, Peter Drucker dedicates many pages to the issue of understanding what it is you really do, your mission and purpose. He writes, "Your business is never apparent. It requires in-depth questioning that gives you a process that provides constant refocusing of what you do. You must continuously analyze and ask yourself, what is my business? What is my mission? What is my purpose?" As you set a valid mission and purpose in place, you'll discover that the picture of what you're trying to accomplish becomes crystal clear and you eliminate all confusion. As a negotiator, once you have a mission and purpose, you can control your emotions. You can make effective decisions. If every decision you make, even one that doesn't turn out well, is in the service of a sound mission and purpose, you cannot go wrong. Not in the long run. How many ways can I say it? Mission and purpose can be the most powerful single card you hold in your hand.